And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. And again, thank you to Leanne Hall, Craig Dean, and we had, of course, special in-studio guests Netta Shafir and John Hartzell from Hartzell Communications. That was very exciting. Now, at 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock. Wow, I sound like a sports announcer. Every second Monday and Tuesday from 3 to 4. Tom, you were thinking I was going to say 3 to fall, but I didn't do that. We have Understanding Autism, Paul Alden, all the way in from Houston, Texas. Paul, how are you?
Doing pretty good, thanks.
That was good yesterday. I really enjoyed that show. A very interesting show, and people can listen to it again. Right through your Facebook, right? The podcast?
Yeah, if you go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/understandingautismradio, or just search Facebook for Understanding Autism. If you go to our page, if you click info, it'll have our podcast list as the website. Or you can just search iTunes for Understanding Autism, and you can get our podcast there for anyone on an iPhone or who uses iTunes.
That is perfect, and it's definitely well worth listening over and over, because some great information yesterday. And so we encourage you to do that. And, of course, all the way from Connecticut, Kim Isaac, RDI specialist. And I should say before Kim, you say hi, Paul Alden, 28-year-old on the spectrum, diagnosed at 23. And yesterday you said between 22
well,
and 23.
I was diagnosed right before my 23rd birthday. Literally, the diagnosis came in the mail on my 23rd birthday. So,
so it qualifies for 23.
Really, yeah.
You round up
on the edge.
You round up. And so, Kim, how are you?
Doing well.
Connecticut, 18 degrees last night, right?
Actually, it was a little warmer. I think it was like 21.
Oh, 24. My gosh. That is just sizzling hot, right?
I was going to say positively balmy.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, and, anyway.
any snow? Any snow?
You know, no. There's some ice, though. This time of year, I've been here. I come every year for the last 5 years. Sometimes there's snow, sometimes they're not. I'm actually flying to D.C. as soon as this show is over, and there might be snow up there. So.
Wow, to D.C. Yeah. You have a meeting with someone very important, like President Obama. No, I'm kidding.
Well, I do have a meeting with someone very important and their family, but it's not President Obama.
Okay, yeah, he'll be on the show next week. Maybe not. But anyway, so Kim, RDI specialist, and of course we had a great show yesterday. You called in as well. You wanted to elaborate a little bit more, however. You had some other information I think you want to give out, some insights, and this was on understanding autism through the lens of culture. Really enjoyed that, and Paul, you did such an amazing job. You really came up with that topic. I very much enjoyed it. Great information.
Well, it's something very important to me, just about communication and why we communicate and why we have problems communicating well with people on the spectrum.
And critical. So, Kim, you wanted to elaborate a little bit more on that particular topic.
I did. I wanted to talk about, you know, I was thinking yesterday during and after the show, this could be, it could be so such a new concept for people that I was feeling like we might need to even break it down even just a little bit more. And maybe we could start with just giving sort of a review of yesterday, just some simple points. If someone didn't tune in yesterday and is listening today, of course we recommend going back to iTunes to hear the whole thing. But I feel like in order to sort of expand the discussion, it would be good to go through some of the highlights from yesterday. And the things that came to my mind, Paul, I'm wondering if you could convey, you know, related to the idea of explicit and implicit communication and maybe clarifying that a little bit for listeners.
Okay, well, just to start with, in my head, I break down conversation into communication into three parts. And these aren't going to necessarily be how everyone sees it or anything, but it's a good framework for starting this conversation. And that's, you have explicit verbal. It's just the words you say, the things that you can actually look up in a dictionary. So you can learn what the word blue means or what the word fish means. That's explicit verbal communication. You have a reference for that. Then there's explicit nonverbal communication. And that's sort of what body language a person uses, if they look tense or if they're smiling, what tone of voice that person uses. Do they say it in a playful tone versus a serious tone? And those, again, are things you can learn, but they're a little less clear because they are different from person to person. But even then, they are something the person talking with you intended to convey. It's something that originated from them and came to you. The third one, and this is the one that our talk sort of focused on yesterday, was the implicit communication. And that's something where if you're talking with someone, you don't tell it to them, you don't express it in anything you do, but you expect them to already know. So if I were talking about, I don't know, baseball or something, I would have possibly an implicit assumption that they know what baseball is, that they know how baseball is played, they know what the positions are, they know, you know, I wouldn't hold a conversation with someone about baseball without some assumptions, or I would have to explain it first. And that's the implicit communication, is just the things we expect people to know. And while I'm using baseball as a clear sort of explicit example here, there are a lot of things that we also assume people to know that are less clear. And those are our values. What is the right thing to do? What is the wrong thing to do? Why it's important to try to help someone else be happy, you know? The value of seeing a smile on someone's face and enjoying that. Things like that that are a little more tenebrous and vague. But at the same time, there's still something that, while we don't think about them every day, we believe in. They are our personal culture. And that's how we get to the idea of looking at these things through the idea of culture, is that that we have, every single person has a set of beliefs that are ingrained in them to the point where they don't think about them most of the time. And I'm not saying that as a bad thing, but more as just a case of, you don't think about tables. You know about tables. Tables exist. They're real. They're right there. It's not something you spend any time thinking about because you know that you can depend on tables being tables. And culture is sort of like that. We have values and ideas inside our head that we don't continually re-examine or go back to because we just know that they're there. They exist. They're real. And what happens is that sometimes you expect your culture to match someone else's, that they will have the same ideas. When you say table, it will create the same picture in their head. But there are other ones where it doesn't create the same ideas. When you say, you know, I think it was a little mean to do that, their idea of what mean is and why it was mean to do that can be different from yours. And so this is where the disconnect in culture can happen. And with someone on the spectrum, because their culture can develop in very different ways due to the core deficits, their ideas about what meanness can mean, for example, can be more different than you expected. It can be outside the range of difference that you are comfortable with.
That totally makes sense. Oh, go ahead, Kat.
It does make sense. And, you know, one of the things that stands out for me in your review of yesterday's information is the fact that you actually chose the baseball example. I thought was interesting because it reminds me of the fact that there are so many things that we assume in our culture that would be common knowledge, or again, just assumed that a person would know baseball. It's like, you know, an American game that, you know, it's family friendly, everybody loves it, it's relaxation. Even if people don't understand how the game works, everybody's, oh, baseball, you know, it has some kind of meaning to them.
Well, and one of the originating thoughts I had about this was the phrase, it's American as baseball and apple pie. That phrase makes sense to us. To most people, that phrase makes sense. But when you stop and say, why are those American? It becomes a little fuzzier. It's like, well, they just are. And that's a lot of what culture is things that you can't quite explain well other than your feelings about them.
Right. And that kind of leads me to the direction of, you know, looking at autism and development simultaneously, you think about, you know, what is the difference in development in terms of, so why is there sort of, why are there sort of subcultures here of autism within a main culture? And obviously there's many other, I mean, there's many cultures, but since we're talking about autism, I'm just using that. And what is the difference in how a typical person has arrived to a particular belief system or assumption versus a person on the spectrum and how they've arrived to something potentially, you know, different? And I think it's important for people to remember that based on what we observe as people and what we observe and put together in our minds and process and make sense of is what becomes the reality for us, and how we react to things is based on what we have processed about information, interactions, and things. And so a person with autism, because you know, different pathways in the brain of a person with autism are more active and less active than others, you know, the information that they take in easily might be slightly different or vastly different from the information that a typically developing person is taking in. And so I like to emphasize that because, again, I find that a lot of people make assumptions about a person with autism going with the fact that, well, he just doesn't want to, or he just doesn't like to, or he's just a pain in the butt, or he's defiant, or he's oppositional, you know. But again, if you go back to the kind of the root of how these differences are developed, it's very difficult to come back and say things like that, because then you realize, wow, we're literally seeing different things in the same situation. And it's really important to be mindful of, two people aren't going to communicate in a flowing fashion if they're not on the same page. And I think that's where a lot of communication breakdowns happen with people with autism and people who don't understand what they're processing versus what the person with autism may be processing.
Yeah, I mean, I think one key importance is sort of the idea of knowing... We have a tendency to... Are you okay there, Kim?
Uh-huh. Yes.
Okay. So we have some assumptions about... We make assumptions when we meet someone. When you describe someone, what kind of person is he? You say, well, he's a businessman, he's Christian, he's... You use words that describe their personal culture so that someone can know what to expect from them. And we have a tendency to use that as a way to more easily identify and interact with people. The difference with someone on the spectrum is that a lot of times you don't know what their culture is, and we have ways for dealing with unknown cultures. We have habits and tools for dealing with unknown cultures, but a lot of time when meeting someone on the spectrum, you don't easily recognize that you're meeting someone who's an unknown culture. And I think we probably don't have much time before the commercial break, but that's something I'd like to get into a little more when we come back. So,
yeah, and we'll come back from a break. And, of course, we're talking to Paul Loudon and Kim Isaac, Understanding Autism. This is Breakthrough Thinking. I'm Dave Isaac, and we'll discuss more of a very important topic, communication. It's really through the lens of culture. What do you assume to be true that maybe it's just your assumption, not the other person? That's very, very important. Great communication tool. We'll be right back.
At Beerham Baum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birnbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Hyten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Hyten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Understanding Autism every second Monday and Tuesday from 3 to 4. And we have Paul Loudon in studio, Kim Isaac in Connecticut somewhere in the 21-degree weather. Oh, that was last night, actually, right? It's probably a lot hotter now. It's like 87, right?
Yeah, a lot warmer, up to, what, 42?
Oh, that's not so bad.
In the daytime, about 42, but in the night, it's rather chilly.
It's about 51 here today, so.
Yeah. Oh, yeah? I know. I heard I missed the rain.
You're missing the rain. It's still going.
It is raining.
Still going?
It's been raining for, I don't know, the whole time I've been here.
Yeah, I know. I think it's going to continue, or there may be one day break, and then Sunday it's going to rain. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And you still might make the rain. We'll see. But anyway, you know, as you were describing this, let me ask you this. Some of the listeners may have the same question, and you and Paul can comment on this. Is this like, you know, everyone sort of has a database in their head, you know, to a frame of reference. And I guess you establish that growing up, and everyone selects a certain frame of reference based on certain filters, what they pay attention to, what they don't pay attention to, what they believe, what they are taught, their role models. So are we really talking about, you know, if someone doesn't have the database based on sort of the typical culture, it's really hard for them to really comment on anything that relates to the typical culture. Would that make sense to Paul or Kim?
I think I sort of get what you're getting at there, and that's part of it is that, I mean, just by definition, someone on the spectrum is going to have picked their culture or developed their culture in a way that doesn't precisely match those around them. I mean, that's almost a definition of part of what it is, because what they're missing is the responses, the observation, the same kinds of observations when they're young of the people around them that someone who's not on the spectrum is likely to have made. And you were talking yesterday about flexibility in thinking, and your use of the word frame of reference really hits on that, because a lot of people have different amounts of frames of reference that they can keep in their head. You almost always have your own personal frame of reference. And your flexibility in dealing with other people depends on how well you can sort of build other frames of references. Mm-hmm. If you work a lot with a company that's based out of, let's pick a country, Brazil, then as you work with people who are representatives of that company, as you go there on business trips, as they come here on business trips and you interact with them and you see what kind of hours they keep, how comfortable they are discussing businesses over meals versus within conference rooms, you create a second frame of reference. This isn't the one you live by, but it's one that you become comfortable with because you see that that's their frame of reference and you get used to using it when you think about those specific people. And we have individual frames of reference. I have one for Kim where I sort of generally know, you know, what she does or how she reacts to certain things. But I also have a broader one that she may be a part of, but is also just for people in general. And that's sort of what you get at here is that people on the spectrum, I think a lot of them may have some difficulty with creating additional frames of reference, understanding differences between their own one and others. But also, people not on the spectrum, when interacting with those on the spectrum, usually don't have a frame of reference, but they don't recognize that they don't have a frame of reference. When you meet someone new, you think, okay, I don't know what kind of person this is. If I meet someone at a concert for my favorite band, I immediately start building a frame of reference. Before I've even said a word to them, I know, hey, they like this band. When I talk with them, I say, you know, maybe I see them in line to get drinks. So I say, oh, hey, you know, they drink things at bands, at concerts, or so on. You start learning about things. You notice their T-shirt. It creates another thing. It helps you identify the person and give a general range of what they might be interested in, how they might react to things. And these tools are harder to apply to someone who thinks differently enough that the signs that are obvious to you don't necessarily mean the same thing to you as they mean to them. And our culture sort of establishes what things mean. Our culture is a very visual culture. You know, your shirt says something about you. The kind of car you have says something about you. What kind of hairstyle you have says something about you. Other cultures may be much more uniform in their presentation of themselves, that there is just a hairstyle you have. So, you know, or a way people dress above a certain age that is less flexible. And so they may learn differently. Instead of noticing things about people's presentation of themselves, they may have a culture where it's better to just directly ask questions or things. And this is part of what it is that when you're dealing with someone on the spectrum, you need to be in that wondering mode, not, okay, I'm connecting their culture to my culture. You know, I'm connecting them. I see them doing this. It probably means this. I'm seeing them doing that. It probably means that. And in the questioning mode, where you acknowledge that you don't know what any of this means yet, and you really need to start from basics.
Yeah, that makes so much sense.
Point.
Yeah, go ahead, Kim.
Well, the other thing, you know, to add in addition to all of these really good thoughts is that I think from my perspective, one of the most sort of disconnecting differences and frames of reference is that relates to one of the core deficits of autism, which is social referencing. And social referencing is, you know, labeled as an emotional social milestone that occurs when you're young. And basically what that is that you learn to observe people in terms of body language, tone, posture, gestures, facial movements, things like that. And what happens is as you're observing those things, you learn that there are patterns to people and patterns to certain types of those nonverbal actions. And the thing is that creates a huge frame of reference in the mind of a person who has received that information. A person on the spectrum has a lot of difficulty processing those elements of communication, and they are able to function and communicate without that information.
Well, and another important thing just about that point is that this development, this observing things and picking up things and noticing patterns, that happens before you've really developed culture. That happens as a newborn, as you're very, very young. So that's something that worldwide is almost a species-wide thing, is observing people, learning body language, stuff like that. And so where we have some habits of looking at people acting different ways, we don't normally or ever really encounter someone who doesn't have this system, because it's something that happens even before you start learning things. It's something that's more fundamental than culture.
Right. It's a foundation point for developing, well, a sense of self, but also moving forward into broadening the perspective from whatever limited, you know, interaction or facial contact that you have out into the world. You know, generally it happens primarily with family members, really close, you know, people to the family, parents, things like that. And, you know, that's what, you know, so then you have this progression where children are learning those foundational things before they enter school environments. School environments really do emphasize the beginning of a lot of cultural things. But there's an assumption, even in kindergarten, that those developmental pieces of processing have been developed when they were supposed to. And for people with autism, you know, they may enter school here in kindergarten, and the teachers might be assuming that they've processed those fundamental things when they haven't. And so a lot of times in the schools, you'll see, regardless of age, I mean, preschool through college, you know, there's a lot of communication breakdowns and misunderstandings based on the difference in the development from the beginning, which therefore led to how a person is processing their culture and, you know, and the people around them. And so it is very much, from my perspective, the disconnect of that foundational learning of observing people that even before the culture can cause a lot of reactions in a person that has autism and a person that doesn't, based on disconnecting on that level, if that makes sense.
Well, I mean, it's a snowball effect, isn't it, where because you have that disconnect, you start developing a personal culture that's different from those around you. And when you get to the school, you have different values than those around you, where another kid has picked up the empathetic, make people smile, respond well to smiles, correct yourself if you're getting negative feedback. That sort of process there may not have developed. And, I mean, initially it is that disconnect, but you also develop a culture of, well, okay, so why don't I value that smile? And so you know, it expands. Where you may initially have this disconnect reason, you also continue doing it and continue building a framework around a different core than everyone has. So you build up from there and create more difference as time goes on.
Right. And that's a really good explanation of how it does, you know, snowball or evolve. From a brain standpoint, what happens in a brain is if there's a part of the brain that's not sort of strong enough or stepping up the way it should be, other parts of the brain, they strengthen themselves. It's almost like the brain will compensate for itself in other areas, you know, that aren't necessarily supposed to be larger or stronger. A person will develop pathways in other areas when they know that there's something not quite right in a particular part of the brain. And I think that contributes to the snowball effect is that human beings in general, you know, they want some kind of order and they need to make sense of things. Yet, you know, in typical development, that need is the same, but also there comes a need for elements of change. And if that's not happening for a person that has autism, the brain is going to seek to try to figure out more sameness and more connections, but it may be doing it in a part of the brain that it wasn't necessarily meant to do. And so I think that contributes to the differences in development of culture, where there are literally people who are, you know, trying to see the world through different parts of the brain than others. And that can cause, I mean, people wouldn't think of it that way. And they certainly assume that everybody's just, you know, having the same information, having the same parts of the brain active, and therefore people choose to behave or react differently. And, you know, that's, well, in some cases that's probably true, but with autism it's really different.
And that, you know, that just creates more challenges. There's no question about it. And I, just before I break out, I just want to make one more comment on the snowball effect that Paula was talking about. I think also is probably the miscommunication leads to, let's say, in a school situation, the teacher now treating maybe people differently a little bit because their lack of tools or understanding of how to even understand and get out of their own culture.
Yeah, if they think you're a problem student, they may become less willing to help you in the future, and so it creates an expanding process of not wanting to work out why this kid is a problem student.
Which is very detrimental because conclusions can be made on that and decisions, and it's a sad situation, but this is why we are here, to help people think differently, because there is this communication enhancement will always, I think, make a difference. And when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion, a great discussion on communication. It's really understanding autism through the lens of culture, something that Paul has really has a passion for, something that he really is communicating very well and creating other pathways for people for greater understanding. And we'll be right back.
At Birenbaum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Hello, this is Michael Dixon. Internationally acclaimed Metropolitan Opera baritone Dmitri Varostovsky will perform a one-time-only opera gala concert with the Phoenix Opera Orchestra and Chorus Tuesday, January 10th at the Orpheum Theater. We've seen the sensational singer in the Met's live HD broadcasts. Now hear him live in concert January 10th. It'll be the musical event of the season. Get tickets now at the Orpheum box office and at phoenixopera.org.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status. Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Understanding Autism every second Monday and Tuesday from 3 to 4, starring Paul Loudon and Kim Isaac. Kim is in Connecticut, 41 degrees, she says, but it gets down to a low of 21. That's your weather report for today. Anyway, of course, there's rain out here. Hey, Kim, do you think I can be a weatherman?
I think you can be anything you want to be.
Wow, there is someone that really has high hopes for me.
And I'm going to say, and that is the answer I expected from her.
Yeah, that's right. We knew you would say that. I think we did. Anyway, she's laughing. Okay. But on the break, I was talking to Paul, and he has a nice concept he wanted to start with. You know, what you think versus how you think are really different type of things. Why don't you elaborate on that?
So what we've been talking about mostly is sort of the idea of culture and sort of how you can use it to help understand people. And you have to sort of think about a distinction between what people think and how people think. Two people can think in very different ways and have the same beliefs. And people on the spectrum typically do think in a very different way than people off the spectrum. I mean, that's what autism is about, how people think, the physical process of thinking. But what your culture is, what your beliefs are and everything really come down to what you think in the end, that you've come to a series of conclusions or ideas based on what experiences you've had, what you believe, what you know. And it's very useful to think about what people think. When you meet someone who's autistic, when you meet someone on the spectrum, a lot of times we first jump to wondering how do they think, because we know it's a mental condition, it's about how they think. And so that's a very frightening thing, is this person thinks in different ways than me. How do I deal with it? I won't be able to understand them. But there's the other idea of what people think, and that's sort of what I've been trying to get to with the culture idea, is that you don't necessarily need to understand how someone thinks to get along with them. If you can look at the what and start talking with them and start understanding what first, it can give you a lot of tools for decreasing the friction. You know, if what they think is this is fun or this is good or this is bad, and you can accept the what, even if you don't really get the how yet, it can give you some greater range in how to interact with them positively.
Would the what be how the what, like, in terms of what meaning do they attach to certain things?
Yeah, you don't need to know how they got to that meaning.
Gotcha.
You just need to know what that meaning is.
Yeah. Kim?
Uh-oh, here we go. I knew what you were going to say. Dave, throw it in there.
Well, neuro-linguistic programming. I don't know. Is that what you were... the meaning of communication is a response you get. I mean, that's pure NLP. It's a presupposition. But I agree, and there really is a big difference from an NLP standpoint, exactly what Paul said. The what and the how are totally different. And what can get you, you know, pretty far in terms of, hey, oh, this is what they mean. I meant something else. They mean something else.
Yeah, and the how they're thinking is incredibly important when you're talking about therapy and improving the overall life of someone on the spectrum. But if you're just talking to someone who needs to get along with them better, it can be very helpful just to focus on the what, the tell them stories about them that can show them what happens when this happens, and help them just see the surface, because the surface is what you interact with. I know that, you know, there's this whole idea of people are deeper and everything, but in reality, most of what we interact with is the surface. And as a starting point, it's a very useful thing.
It really is. And I like what you said, Paul. You know, the NLP also has surface structure and deep structure. The what is the surface structure? Absolutely right. The other thing I would comment on the what versus the how, from an NLP standpoint, what is the sort of the content and how is the process of how people think? And would you, Paul and Kim, say that's similar to how you're thinking?
Sort of what I'm thinking, yeah.
Yeah. Kim, your turn.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I agree, too. I'm trying to process what Paul has said. I have to say, and I told Paul this yesterday, I am a very, I'm like a hyper-referencer. And honestly, watching a person helps me literally think through better what I'm hearing them say. Mm. And it's very different to experience Paul's insights via listening only. So it's actually taking me longer to sort of take in what he's saying. So, yes, at first, you know, instinct, yes, I agree. I'm just trying to, you know, put it all together in my mind.
Well, you're doing a great job. I think you're describing this this concept very, very important. So, Paul, what you're really saying is that to really, you know, pare it down a little bit. Don't make it complex when you're trying to understand people. Start to focus in on the what. What do they really mean? And bridge the gap. Gain an understanding.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, you know, I talked about I get caught up on things. People get caught up on things. That there's sort of the difference between knowing a person and understanding a person. And while we'd all like to understand those around us, sometimes you have to look at what's good enough. And you can make more progress if you're trying to get to the point where you aren't frustrating each other. I think a lot of times you can make more progress looking at the what kinds of things rather than the why kinds of things.
That really makes sense. And Kim's going to love this. That's from a NLP standpoint. That's chunking down, make it a little bit smaller components. And that's always more manageable for people usually, because if people get overwhelmed, maybe they're looking too globally. That's sort of the how they're thinking, and maybe start to chunk it down. What's one component? What's one behavior aspect of this person? What could it mean? And it makes it a little bit more manageable, easier.
Well, if you're the kind of person who can think it, the idea that you're always making progress is very helpful there. Even small steps forward are steps forward. You're in a better place.
Yeah.
So if you can think like that, you can say, okay, so I can just keep doing this and keep moving forward. And maybe as you learn more of the what's, you can start to piece together the why's in a different way. But if you start with the why's, you don't have any tools. You don't have anything. You're trying to think about how this person who thinks different than you thinks without any useful frame of reference. So you need to build that frame of reference, which is composed of the ideas they have, the things they express, the things they do. You have to understand that external frame of reference before you can go back and try to figure out what did it originate from.
Yeah, yeah. I think make it as simple as possible. Einstein said that, make things as simple as possible, but not too simple.
I think he's referenced often as saying something like, if you can't explain it simply, you don't understand it well enough.
Yeah, I like that better, yes.
That's one that... sort of applies here is that look at this. You want to look for the simple explanations, and that'll help you begin to understand it rather than trying to tackle the most complex problem first.
So you're saying really people make it too complex very often.
Sometimes we do, just because we want to understand. I mean, I know I have that problem where I want to understand things and I get really stuck. But I mean, again, it's just one of those things. The word autism is intimidating. And, you know, my nephew has autism. Now I want to go out and buy 4 books so that when he comes over to my house, I've read up on autism and understand what autism is and what it means. But you want to start with who is my nephew? Yeah. Not what is autism, but let's find out about him, what he believes, how his life is. And then you can work back to his thought process. And then those books can be more meaningful if you read them later after you've learned about your nephew. So, you know, call your nephew's parents and ask them, you know, okay, he's coming over to hang out. You know, what do I need to know about him? Tell me some stories about him. Tell me what his life is like. So look at the actual facts and come backwards.
Sort of like a puzzle. Piece it again.
One of the symbols for autism and the autism community is a puzzle piece. So.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow.
Well, I also think it's important to remember to look at the humanness of the person first and not classify them by a label or, you know, a disorder. And I think you're right, Paul. I mean, when people hear autism, an automatic sort of panic button goes off in people. Mm. Whether you're a parent or just a person in the same grocery store, you know, there's a strong feeling of uncertainty and fear that you won't, you know, what do I do? What do I do? And I think that's where it gets complex. I think that's where people make it complex. Autism itself is extremely complex, but we forget that when we start at those basics on the human-to-human level, we have to treat each other with respect on that level and start at that level first before, as you said, you know, learning or reading about the autism. It's really important to acknowledge people for being
people.
Human. Right. And also I have a funny based on the Einstein comment. You're going to love this. No, speaking of Einstein, Paul, I was going to ask you how my dad's hair was today.
Oh, good one. I think it's...
I'd say it's pretty normal.
Yeah, it's
all right.
Pretty much like Einstein. Yes, I've
all
been
right.
called that before.
For those of you watching online, yeah, Facebook us your thoughts on that.
Speaking of Facebook.
I had to throw something funny. Sorry about that.
I would just like to remind people that we do welcome comments on our Facebook page, but we also have a text number you can reach us at during the show, 832-278-1441. Or you could call in at 602-296-3632. And we'd love to hear any of your thoughts on the ideas of autism as culture and communication, especially going into the last segment of our show.
Absolutely.
Or my dad's hair.
Yeah. Yeah, go to breakradioshow.com, see us live right now, and we'll get some comments on my hair. Okay, it is well-groomed today. Now, we're going to take a quick break right now. You're listening to Understanding Autism with Paul Alden and Kim Isaac. Kim is all the way in Connecticut on her way to Washington, D.C., 41 degrees in Connecticut, about 51 in Phoenix, raining. We'll be right back.
How healthy is your business? Is your business plan helping your bottom line? Do you even have a business plan? Barbara Haggerty of Mind Your Own Business has over 25 years of helping businesses of all kinds and sizes to get them where their owners want them to go. She uses her special wellness check process. It's to assess where your business is now, and then uses her own unique 7 steps business excellence plan to expand and grow your business into something to be proud of. Barbara will take a holistic or a global appreciation view of your company, and that's absolutely going to make a difference to your bottom line. So call now and schedule a wellness check and watch your business grow. 602-750-4518. That's Barbara Haggerty of Mind Your Own Business, 602-750-4518.
Weidenauer, Heinten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Weidenauer, Heinten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Understanding Autism every second Monday and Tuesday from 3 to 4. We have Paul Alden in studio, Kim Isaac in Connecticut on her way to Washington, D.C. Kim, you're going to like this because I Googled quotes from Albert Einstein during the break. And a couple of them are pretty interesting. He says, imagination is more important than knowledge. That's pretty cool. Gravitation is not responsible for people falling in love. Okay, that's my quote for
today. Oh, wait a minute. You're going to love this. I got a text over the break saying that somebody absolutely loves your hair.
Well, can you say? Okay, tell me off there. Someone loves my hair. Okay, I'm excited. Okay, and the other thing he said I thought was interesting, I want to know God's thoughts. The rest are details. But okay, so I was talking to Paul on the break. And he made a really good point about, you know, a typical person versus someone on the spectrum when there's a miscommunication. Often someone on the spectrum, it could be a bigger situation.
Well, I mean, like the things we've been talking about communication, culture, a willingness to look at, you know, who a person is first and then why they are the way they are afterwards. All of this are things that can be useful in everyday life, even when you're not dealing with someone on the spectrum. a lot of the reason we're talking about it in this context, other than, you know, the name of the show, Understanding Autism, is that with someone on the spectrum, you may not recognize the differences as easily. That the differences are often, or even when you do recognize the differences, you may not recognize them in the right way as easily. That things can go wrong in more interesting and challenging ways. And so these tools, this willingness to step back and try to think about things different ways can be more important, because when something goes wrong due to a misunderstanding with a normal person, a lot of times it's just a minor frustration. But misunderstandings with someone on the spectrum can often build up because they're continually happening, that you're not getting as many understandings to sort of mitigate and balance that. You don't have that balance that you have with normal people where there's some give and take in the same way.
So there's a break in the feedback, perhaps, to react or to respond in a different way, perhaps.
Often, yes.
Yeah. Kim, what's your experience with that?
Exactly that. I think that's part of something actually in relationship development intervention in the program. That's one of the very first education training topics that we talk about, which is the emotional feedback system. And it really is essentially all about, how differences in feedback and assumed feedback and all these things we're talking about really alters a relationship for a person, for one, whether it's between the person and their parent or the person and a friend or just relationships in general. The different pieces of feedback that are given and received just kind of don't really mesh well, based on the fact that people are assuming that the other one knows what the other one's thinking in the context, and but yeah, feedback is extremely important for building relationships, close relationships, emotional feedback, and being able to understand one another and communicate. And even if there are problems within the feedback system, Paul's point of really entering an interaction with a person with a mind of he says wondering, and I like that too. I also say curiosity, and showing that interest really is worth the few extra minutes it takes to really, shift your mind into thinking that way in order to understand a person better and relate better.
So it's really like a lens, what you look through. Are you looking through evaluation, judgment, compassion, or curiosity, like you said, or a state of wondering and a state of questioning? And I think people do have control over what lens they look for. They may have to learn how to do that, but it really makes a difference, just as it would make a difference if someone is angry and looks through the state of anger trying to solve a puzzle or come up with a solution. States of mind are pretty important as well. And how, let me ask Paul and Kim, how does a state of mind impact what we're talking about, one state of mind?
I mean, I think state of mind, to me, I sort of see everything is layers. We've talked about the underlying how you think, and that's, someone on the spectrum thinks differently than other people. Other people, everyone thinks different, but it's within sort of a range, and people on the spectrum are one outlier, but what you get on top of that is what you think. And I think on top of that is your current emotional state. That's mm-hmm. That's the last filter that you're sort of seeing the world through, because that's the most immediate one. You are feeling that right now. It's
right.
Not things that you remember. It's not sort of the underlying decision-making process, but it's what's affecting you right now. So that's it's part of the stack, and you're seeing through all of that. It's like wearing you go to the optometrist, and he puts several different lenses in front of your eyes, and the one at the front changes things sometimes the least, but it also changes it between can you see and can't you see even then, and the other ones all build up to that. So if you have a certain underlying structure, some emotions may work better for you, some emotions may work worse for you. You may not feel that emotions are good for you in general in terms of decision making, or you may feel best when you have an emotional connection to the process you're working on, that I'm angry, this drives me forward, it gives me inspiration to move on this. So emotions are different from person to person in terms of how they affect things, and I think it's all part of this stack.
That's a very good point. Kim, what's your comments on that?
Again, I'm still taking in this puzzle analogy.
You're okay, still looking at my hair, I think.
No, I've seen enough of your hair, thank you. No, I'm just kidding. No, what I think is important, though, I think all of this, I mean, you know, expanding on this whole through the lens of culture, I think one of the things I see in my work is that, you know, sometimes people will put expectations on their loved ones with autism based on the lens that culture tells them they should, even if it's something they don't even believe. And I think that's a whole other aspect, you know, regardless of a disability or regardless of what problems a child has, they should do this, and this. You know, those kind of firm beliefs. And I do work with families actually from various cultures, in addition to them having, a loved one on the spectrum. And I have found that to be interesting in terms of what they expect, how they communicate, what they really feel strongly about versus what they don't. And I just think that thinking about, you know, I say this, Paul and I talk about this a lot, but really thinking about what you're thinking about and being open to examining yourself and your interactions with others is actually a really great tool to kind of evolve your own personal awareness and knowledge of the world, because the world is changing fast. I mean, as we know, it's always going to be changing. And it's helpful if a person is not only, I mean, doesn't have to love change, but is able to receive the changes as peacefully and, you know, least amount of stress and anger as possible. And I think by keeping that mind of curiosity and thinking is a healthy way to receive any new information, whether it's from people or from the news or whatever. And I think people are very quick to react versus to step back and, you know, employ that curiosity process.
Well, I mean, I think the overall lesson, and this is something that's incredibly hard to do, is just see if you can think about things outside of your own assumptions. Then you can compare them to your assumptions, but trying, constantly living in a state of trying to identify your assumptions and putting them aside when dealing with things.
I think that the identification, I mean, that's the thing. I think a lot of people don't even realize they have them. I think that because thinking, especially that kind of thinking, ultimately, especially as adults, it really goes into your brain as more of a background process than a forefront process. So you have all these things in your mind you don't even realize are happening, because now it's not where your brain needs to be in the moment as an adult or whatever. And so really taking that process that's been put on the back burner and bringing it forward and saying, okay, wait, what is going on back here? You know, what am I doing? Mm-hmm. And just being more self-aware. Like you were saying, I mean, being self-aware, it's one of the hardest things to do. But I think for people that have loved ones on the autism spectrum, it could be the best thing and the single most effective thing you could ever do.
But this does point out, and we only have about a minute left, that there are things out there to help people, and that's the most important thing. So, Paul, again, how do people replay this show, yesterday's show? How do you do it?
Go to facebook.com/understandingautismradio, and you can find our podcast there underneath the info section, or search for us, Understanding Autism, on iTunes.
Well, thank you, Paul Loudon. We'll see you next month. Kim, Isaac, have a safe trip. This is Understanding Autism. Great topic today. Definitely get out there and replay this show. And we're, of course, on every second Monday from 3 to 4 and Tuesday from 3 to 4. Thank you again, Paul. Thank you, Kim. And stay tuned tomorrow, Breakthrough Sports, Wednesday, 2 to 4. See you then.